not start early. Well, we didn't start early. Okay, we'll start with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Call the meeting to order.
I'll move the minutes.
Okay. Jennifer, a second?
Not really.
Any, I know. Any discussion?
Nah.
So, I guess, I guess we'll do the regular one first and then we'll do the joint? Or can we do them together? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion carried. Now we need a motion for the joint meeting.
I'm going
to move it. Okay, Jennifer, for a second.
Probably. Oh,
any discussion on the joint meeting?
No.
Okay, great. Okay, so I guess we'll start with Dr. Roberts.
We're all underway with a couple major projects, capital projects. Fiber lab will be done on August 10th, and it's the 22nd, so we're looking forward to that. There's a groundbreaking we are starting the leach field, which things are missed. That is a big project. We are breaking ground. Well, we tested 2 days ago, and I guess we're breaking ground for it. So we'll start that project.
Oh, great.
A lot of activity. Enrollment came in. We were satisfied with our role. For the year, like 70 FTE over our budget.
So good.
Great.
Yeah.
Now we're looking forward to a good fall. Right now we're about using what we were last year, chicken bath.
It's still a little early, right?
It's early, but we have a day to day comparison.
So okay.
Last year at this time, we
lost okay.
Close. What's interesting is we actually have more students this year than we did in the last few years. But they're taking less credits. There's a trend. And it's kind of more of our students are working part-time. More students is taking less credits.
Wow.
Interesting. So we'll watch that and work on it and try to come back.
Well, maybe some of them are doing it, trying to juggle their work and getting a degree.
Well, we did do a lot of marketing for the adult ed, we call it the adult market, and that adult market's going to be part-time.
Great.
Anything else?
We got going for the summer.
Great. Thank you.
So I had a question about that we asked in our joint meeting, which was about, well, there were two things. One, the tuition increase, I felt like because we were talking about students under 125, as you said, generally receiving some degree of support. But does the average person know that when they look at the tuition? Is there a lot of information out there for them to be aware that shouldn't be a threshold for them to worry about?
No, we do a lot of marketing in that case. The thing is to get to the right people, and I don't know how to do that. And I do go for it to the internet and as much media as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's the best of the drive.
And high schools and that sort of thing?
Oh, in high schools, definitely in high schools.
They
let them
know that.
I'm in nine school districts myself.
I know you're very active.
And we also have Matt Green, who does college fairs in each one. And that's the message. You know, especially if you have other schools 4 years there, you're going to get free. It's not going to cost you personally.
Yeah, I think that the average is the key. We were just wondering about that whether the tuition increase would appear to be a barrier for certain people, and I didn't feel like it would if people are aware of such flexibility. And I think with the media really promoting Excelsior,
any student thought that it cost them more realizes it's free. You know, unfortunately or fortunately, you know, there's only about 12 kids that we'll have next year that will benefit from Excelsior. Now, that sounds bad, but on the other hand, you're getting the TAP and the PAL, which covers that anyway. They didn't need anything at this point.
You mean there's not many students whose family comes over 121?
It's not.
Yeah, well,
it's the other way around.
Okay. Yeah.
The majority have no, you know, they weren't going to pay it.
Okay.
And what the expense is, if you really look at what it costs a student, it's the living.
Yes, of course.
You know, it's the car, it's the home, the food, the drug, and the other. That's what the expense is. We were able to augment that. Something like that.
Okay, thank you. Lee? You're welcome.
Okay. Good to be here again. See everybody. This is a new program brochure and program guide that we just put together. If you would like some to hand out or whatever, let me know. Yes.
Thank you.
I'm trying to update all of our info with it. Relate to program and whatever, make it easier for folks to understand the kinds of things that we do. We'll be happy when they get the sign back up on the building. Kingston Plaza is going to be doing all of their storefronts. Oh. The signage up on the top. So cooperative extension, the big cooperative extension sign is down, which we miss terribly, but it'll be back soon. And the plaza will look better for it or whatever. So the big thing for us coming up is Ulster County Fair, August 1 through 6. You should have all received an invitation, I think, to the opening ceremonies. What I'd like to offer is if any of you would like a personal guided tour by one of our 4-H young people while you're there, either then or if you want to come another time or whatever, let me know. We've done this in the past. We'd be happy to set that up for you, and you get a chance to see through the eyes of the young people who are participating in the program about the kinds of things that they're excited about, passionate about, learning about, and have the opportunity to show that off. That's part of the whole purpose of the fair, of extension, supporting the Ulster County Fair and youth participation in that, is so that they get an opportunity to let the public know, let other folks know about the kinds of things that they're learning and whatever. So they're pretty excited about doing that. So if anybody's interested in that, let me know. Like I said, we can set that up.
So great. Opening day is the first, and that's the day?
Well, opening day actually is Tuesday. And that's carload night. And we don't generally do the opening ceremonies on carload night, because most of the folks coming in with the carload don't particularly care about opening ceremonies or anything else other than their lives. So, but the official day of grand opening for the fair is that Wednesday, which is the 2nd. And I think 6 o'clock. A lot of you have come.
I put it in my book, but I don't remember.
I'm doing it
for
my son.
That would be great. And we've, like I said, I can set the tours up for pretty much any time. The kids that come to the fair know that they are expected to promote their projects and the kinds of things, their interests and whatever. So at pretty much at any given time, I could find a teenager or a young person to help take you around and talk about what they're learning about, what they're excited about. So it's kind of a nice slice of the fair and the whole rest of it. Most of them have that. A lot of them have animal fair, so that it's always fun to hear kids talk about their animals. What they know about them. I'm always amazed at the kinds of things that they do know. We have a couple of contests that happen at the fair. Skillathons, I think they call them, with rabbits and poultry and whatever. And it is amazing what a 10-year-old can learn and keep in their head about how you show a rabbit, how you turn it over, what you look for to make sure it's not sick. The kinds of diseases that you have to be careful about and whatever. And we have young folks that are really very good at this. And it helps in your own development because they're learning about the development of another animal. So, as well as the other projects. We're going to have a lot of exhibits and programs at the fair. This year, with the tick population being as high as it is and the incidence of Lyme disease, being as high as it is, not only in Ulster County, but the surrounding counties. We've got our master gardeners doing a talk kind of all week. They're in the horticulture building, but they're doing some specific things on ticks, but they'll do tick identification all day. while they're there. So not only can people bring in their soil to have it tested, it's free at the fair, they can also bring any insects in that they're not sure about, or and they'll have examples of ticks. We work with the health department and stuff too. They give us a bunch of different kinds of information.
You give out tick kits, like the tweezers?
You know, I don't know that we have them. The health department might have them.
I think they're reordering them. Because with the TikTok, they were
terrible. Yeah. And oftentimes we've worked with the health department so that they've given out, at different times they gave out insect repellent. They did that a couple of years ago and whatever. So we work with them and hand that stuff out. Or we can send folks to the health department to let them know that it's going to be there. So we'll make sure whatever the health department has, because I know that is huge and high on their list. But we can identify ticks. We can do it in the office as well, just if you talk to constituents. Sometimes it's good to know, well, not sometimes, it's good to know what kind of tick it was, whether it was a dog tick, whether it was a deer tick, or whatever, they all carry different kinds of diseases.
Yeah.
The dog ticks are so much easier to identify, whatever, because they're big, and they get really huge. The deer ticks are a lot more, lots of times people have them on their bodies and don't even know.
They don't even know, because they're so small.
So, we're going to be doing my favorite, the Blubber Burgo demo, which is going to be on Thursday. And we just talked about how much fat are you really eating. Okay, so we have two demos that we do. One is on how much sugar is in some of the foods that you eat that you don't think have sugar in them. And then this one is on how much fat is in there. So you'll learn the difference between what's 80%. If you're looking at ground beef, and you could get 80%, 85%, 90%, it'll be very visual so that you can then make that kind of educated choice. The sugar one works. It is one of the best things I've ever done with teenagers because we actually take all of the different kinds of bottles that have sugar in them, whether it's fruit juice or soda or whatever, and show folks exactly how much sugar is in there. So it's a very visual, it's very easy to understand. And I think we've changed a lot of kids' diets because they actually see it. It's like, you know, could you sit down and eat 12 teaspoons of sugar? You know, how long does it take to drink a soda? That's the kind of thing that we try to do is to put it on a really practical basis so that kids can see that, and adults as well. So that's going to be going on Friday. We're going to have our stream table, which shows folks how water affects rivers and surrounding properties, if there's flooding and those kinds of things. We've had it at the fair before. It's a really very good visual kinds of things. And folks can play with things, you know, you can put extra water in, you can take the water away, what happens to that, and whatever, so. And then we've got a couple of cooking demonstrations on. And then on Friday as well, our ag folks are going to be there, and they're going to be doing a small grain and field crop display, where they're going to talk about the small grains that we're growing now in the Hudson Valley, that so many of our brewers, our craft brewers, and our distillers are really looking for local products. Ulster County was, back at the time of the Revolution, that's what we grew, almost all grains. We were like the grain basket. And one of the reasons that the British burned Kingston was not so much to burn the city. Well, they didn't like that either, but they really wanted to burn all those barns in Hurley that were hosting all that grain. So, because that's what was feeding the Patriots or whatever. Not a whole lot of folks know that. It became very difficult. It became very easy to grow grain in the Midwest, and they had less pest problems and less disease problems, and so it moved from here out. But now there's a really big interest in getting it back here so that we can have local grains to do our local beers and distillers and those kinds of things as well. So they're going to actually be doing demonstrations on milling the grain that we grow here, so you can actually take home pancake mix, you know, and... should be a lot of fun. So I'm hoping that if you have the opportunity, you get a chance to see that kind of thing. And they're going to be hatching baby chicks, which is always going to be exciting. So other classes coming up, not only at the fair, but other things. One is building a bug hotel, which is building a place for beneficial bugs. It's actually a little house that you put together. It's a winter habitat for beneficial insects. There are some you want to keep around.
I'm going to be doing the ServSafe certification exams. We've been doing that for the past couple of years. That's for folks that are food servers so that they can learn how to safely, they get certified. It's actually a certification that they need to have in order to show that they've been through the program and have passed it. You can take a spice blending kitchen class. You can learn about pressure canning. And you can learn about wildlife proofing your garden all in July and August. So they still have to figure out how to get rid of the voles in my yard, but they're working on it. So lots of things going on. Most of our effort right now is going into getting ready for the fair, and they're expecting, they had 50,000 folks there over the 5 days for the last couple of years and whatever. The fairgrounds is looking really good. They just hosted an event there, Tiny Houses, which there was a lot of interest in.
I missed it. I tried to go.
Yeah, there were a lot of the city board.
Yeah, they did. We sold milkshakes there as a fundraiser for Cooperative Extension. So it was fun. The folks that are interested in tiny houses are an interesting group. Probably they said 1% of the folks who actually want to see them would actually live in one. And I decided that would be a great little vacation, kind of lake home kind of thing and whatever, but otherwise, not for me. not for me.
But some of the people there actually live in them, right?
They actually brought some that people are currently living in.
Yeah.
You can pick them up and move them around. Just kind of an interesting going on. As far as the whole agriculture field, things are humming along. Should be a really good crop for apples this year. The weather events have not been damaging as they have in the past or whatever. So we're looking forward to a really good growing season. Sweet corn should be ready. Actually, there's some of it ready now. I'd wait another week or two. The very first stuff probably is not as good as the stuff that you're going to get in a couple of weeks, and that'll run right through September and August. So we hope to see you at the fair. If there's, again, anything that you're particularly interested in, let me know. We'd be happy to set up a time for you to come and chat and talk, whether it be with our any of our the rest of our staff or our development staff folks as well.
Thank you.
I did have a question for you about this tick thing, and I wanted to ask Ken. I had a conversation with Tracy Bartels very recently. Her daughter got a pretty bad bout of it, and she was tested positive. She got all the information about what was in the in her blood sample, and so she was very alarmed. And she said, "Well, it'd be great to bring more of that awareness to the legislature." But and I said, well, and I think I even called you maybe about this. I talked to Dr. Ruth Osfeld from Carey Institute of Ethicists and Studies because I used to work with them when I was in college, and they're kind of the scientists there are in the same department where I was. And they worked with the Dutchess County Tick Lyme Task Force to bring public information forums. And he was very concerned because there was a conversation on public radio a few weeks before that was completely wrong. There was so much information that was wrong in that segment that he was very concerned about the amount of misinformation that's out there. For example, people being misdiagnosed with Lyme disease when they have something else like Alzheimer's. And he also talked about the rate, which was very different than what was mentioned on the show. So I just wondered if we're at all in touch with him. Dr. Osfeld, because he's considered the leader in the Northeast, so he knows the most about this sort of stuff. And Dutchess County is consulting with him, and they held a forum. And so I asked if it would be something that we would want to do, and if it is, he would be completely willing to come over and support a discussion, community discussion about that. And I don't... It doesn't have to be legislature. They can just be working together.
Well, did you do the TikTok in other places in the county? I know there was one in Saugerties. Yeah.
We do that
You know, we want to talk
about educators are out there on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
If you're a senior group, if you're a Elks Club, if you're a group that's looking for a talk, routinely provide it.
I just think he was talking about a high level discussion that could then help also educate the leaders in the field, because what he was saying was that there's a lot of people bringing the information out there, but not all of it is accurate.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of work, you know, the member of our board of health, Dr. Trank, is one of the leading tick-borne disease experts in the Hudson Valley. A lot of things that we deal with, where there's people that don't believe the guidance from the CDC is the appropriate guidance for treating Lyme disease or tick bite.
Right.
So we get a lot of that. How dare you only prescribe 10 days worth of doxycycline and not 6 months?
Right.
That back and forth. We deal with that on a daily weekly basis. I hear it once a week, to be honest with you.
And it changes, so quickly.
Yeah. We tend to follow the advice of CDC and the.
Right.
So there's a lot of alternate healing type of things.
Which might not be true.
It predates a lot of the members that are here, but the last time we had a joint working group with the legislature.
Bob Ayala.
Bob was here, and we had a public hearing that was an interesting experience for me.
It was. Because I think the most. Even though nothing was really necessarily productive, as far as it goes, I think it was really healing for people that were going through the Lyme disease and felt like they weren't being heard. They had a voice. They came and spoke, and it was very emotional. But I think it was really important for them to just be able to share their story and feel like,
I thought it was productive. We went through a lot of the recommendations that came from the we've had a lot of the physicians in the county are reluctant to explore a treatment that's beyond what's recommended by the CDC and other professional organizations. I know there's a lot of doctors that have their own approach to attract people.
I just think whether it's a policy or educational sort of thing, I think it would be helpful to have a degree of awareness and even given the prevalence. I heard the report this morning or yesterday that with the leading county in the state. They've singled out Ulster County on the radio as having 500 cases last year, as opposed to any. It caught my attention that they're reporting it, and then they're saying Ulster County on the news. And that's, first of all, alarming some people, but also the idea that maybe doctors are providing consistent information, and that, whereas this doctor from Hyde Park is saying something like, he was saying that 80% carry a specific pathogen when really only 6% do, and that feeds into a kind of paranoia. Yeah. And not that people shouldn't be alarmed, but to do that, it should be that all doctors are kind of on the same page with this, whether it's about treatment, and I just think it would be helpful as a policy maybe to help.
Well, prevention is always your first line of defense. There is a lot of information on the Cooperative Extension website about getting your yard, talking about preventing ticks, the kinds of things that you can use. A lot that you get actually from the health department about the kinds of things to use. The best stuff to use is DEET. whether folks like it or not, it's the thing that's most effective on ticks, and then you sort of have to weigh the risks, whatever. I mean, that's the kind of thing that the website talks about, so that folks can look at that and then weigh the risks of what they want to do. There's a whole bunch of other things. There's peppermint oil. There's all kinds of things. Some things work better than others. But the best thing is trying to make sure that your yard and where your family hangs out has the least amount of ticks possible.
And they have those tick tubes, which was at that they taught at the
tick tubes.
Yeah, they had the permethrin.
Oh,
So there's a lot of that information.
Because a lot of the ticks are coming spread through mice.
Right.
So they're taking the cotton back to her nest, and it's getting rid of the ticks kind of at the source before
they're taking it off. There's a lot of different things that folks can do. And again, prevention is always your best line of defense and your first line of defense. That and then making sure if you have children, even if they've just been out in your yard, that you make sure that you do tick checks and those type of things. All that information is on our website. It's also on the health department website, which has a ton of information. And actually what we do is we take in the recommendations for the kinds of things that you can use to prevent tick bites and whatever from health departments, the state health department, our health department. It's on our website as well. So it's a really critical issue for us. This winter was not... was conducive to ticks surviving as opposed to...
There was still snow on the ground and the kids were coming in with ticks on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we also realize that ticks are a problem year-round. You can pick up ticks in February. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a warm spell or whatever, they're out in your home. Mosquitoes are another problem and also carry a lot of disease and disease vectors. There's information on the website about getting your yard as mosquito-free as possible.
So would you agree to the idea of having a tick awareness or, you know, one of those presentations at the legislature? And obviously we'd have to ask the chairman, and I don't know if it's scheduled out to the end of the year.
We do them all the time.
So I'm just saying. You know, because ours is televised and, you know.
So, well, probably would have to be something special because it would take too long to do a privilege of the floor.
Yeah. Right. It would take too long. Unless
like if they did a special, special thing, yeah.
Yeah, it would have to be a shorter info.
But I don't know. We probably can't have it televised if we do a special thing, can we?
Yeah, you
can
pay for it.
Yeah. There we go.
Okay, it's just a thought.
Right.
I know it's not our committee.
The visit rule taker that you know, wants information and everything.
Okay. I just know I have visitors from the city all the time, and they know that we're famous for it. So it's one of the concerns that we have.
Sure, it's a possibility.
Even economic development could be affected.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's not a trailhead without a tick prevention poster on it right now. We've done a lot of that work. It's a reality of today and climate change, and just the way things are different today. Yeah. But again, there's a lot of, we discover a tick or tick bite. A lot of people go to the worst case instantly that I'm somehow going to die, and I think that causes a lot of hysteria.
I agree.
And not all ticks carry this.
Of course.
No. And it depends on what different doctors have totally different protocols. Each practice has a different protocol.
Yeah, and that's what we sometimes run into difficulty.
And there's really not...
Our health department follows CDC guidelines. There's others in this area that... or faith healers or alternative medicine healers, and
I think even the general practitioner, in general, some of them, want you to do something right away. Some are like, unless you have symptoms.
The protocol is a very short course of doctor's cycle meeting or similar
right.
A lot of people don't feel that that's enough to
Some of them are saying not unless you have a symptom, they're not going to give you anything.
Yeah, I think pretty much every doctor, emergency room or urgent care type doctor, they give you restrictive and short courses.
Yeah, they didn't with my daughter. Okay. I think even there is a little inconsistency with the thing.
The last thing that I wanted to let you know is that I have announced that I am retiring at the end of January of 2018, and my position has been posted and it's out, I guess, in a lot of places. I'm pretty much out of the process, so I don't know a whole lot about it, although I have read the job description. So if you know of anybody who would fill that role or be interested in heading up a Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County. They would apply directly to Cornell University, and they can call my office and maybe get the website or whatever so that they can. I think you're applying online.
Okay. I'm not looking forward to that, Lee.
Thank you.
some shoes to fill, huh?
I know. Yeah, some shoes to fill. Yeah.
We don't want to lose you.
I know.
Well, I'm not going anyway. So, I'm glad to be involved with the community and whatever. Have grandchildren.
A little more freedom.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate everything you do.
Thank you.
Really.
Will there be a retirement event?
There could be.
There'll be no chases.
What's that?
There'll be no chases.
There'll probably be no chases.
maple syrup, candy.
Oh, maple syrup. Yeah, we've done that. I wonder if you've ever done a maple syrup milkshake. That's an idea. Listen, if you look at the sugar content of those milkshakes, everything in moderation, all right? So milkshake,
don't do
sugar for the next 3 days.
Don't show that in your sugar display.
You
guys
have any sugar to go buy those.
You should know what's in there. And we can
that's true. That's true.
Sure.
It's like the best kind of
smoothie with raspberries and no sugar.
Okay.
I mean, no
added sugar.
Hey, listen, but here's the thing. Sugar is sugar, all right? So when we tell kids and you tell parents, and it's just now, and I still remember my mother when I was a kid, when I was a mother, and I gave my kids apple juice, thinking, oh, it's healthy, it's apple juice, I bought it from, you know, fresh apples and that kind of stuff and whatever, and she kept saying, no, and then now when you look at how much sugar is in there, orange juice, so you have to be aware of that. You have to be aware of it because it all breaks down to that simple sugar.
Because during that period of time when it was really being marketed,
yeah,
that was the number one cause of childhood obesity.
Yeah.
Because people thought they were doing juices.
It was juicing so much stuff.
Because you can only do, at daycare, you can do 4 ounces a day and that's it. If they have orange juice in the morning, that's they can't have it again. But people don't know that, so they think it's a better alternate, and it's really not. You have to push the water.
So, all right, I'll tell them to put that milkshake cup up there and show you how much sugar you get in it. But I want you to buy them anyway.
I know. Put it in a different area. So, thank you.
And it's all local milk, local ice cream, so.
And thank you, Lee. And Evelyn Clark is here today for the Youth Bureau. And can't pronounce. Is there anything you want to say about any resolutions or just see if
I did bring you the Runaway Homeless Youth Annual Report from 2015.
Oh, great.
You guys would be interested in seeing that.
Yeah.
This is put out by the Office of Children's and Family Services. Do you want to pass it around? I feel like I'm schooling.
Thank you. So, I hope I brought it down. Now, is the shelter in Kingston?
There is one shelter in Kingston. One's in Rosendale.
For you?
Oh, so we have three.
Yes.
One in Rosendale and one where?
Only one is actually a shelter.
Right, one is an emergency shelter, two are transitional homes.
Okay.
We don't want to put the addresses in.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But is it for all ages or just for youth?
Either teenagers.
So if they call a hotline, they're directed to it.
Family of Woodstock. Yeah, they don't have
to.
The shelter at the family house, which is on Creek Lock Road in Rosendale, is for 16 kids. And the other home, transitional living, is in there you'll see, they break them down in the report,
by Craig the Seltzer, which would be Family Health, and then the TILPS, Transitional Living Program, is what family call it the Midway, 1 and 2. And they have one house, one Midway that's in Kingston, and one Midway that is in Ellenville. In this report, one of the things that's interesting on page 3 is that 7% of the youth that are in the, and this is a report of the state runaway homeless program, 7% of the youth in RHY program had children with them. 7%. And the majority of the youth who are in the homes are females.
On page 3 or so?
Yeah. Down near the those bullets.
Oh, I see. Okay. Clear from the bottom.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the charts show you different things like this. They're pretty much self-explanatory as far as the age of the kids, the gender of the kids that are in the home, the services that they receive. On page 12, I should be interested in that page because it talks about what the situation, the living situation has been set up by the agencies when the kids leave, like from the crisis center. And you'll notice that that tall blue line is a lot of the kids are supposed to be, are going home to their parents. I just broke it out for our shelter, like 3 in their 2014 report. A family provides a report to the state, and the state, all of the home, the shelters, the individual learning centers, also the TILPs, also provide this information to the state, and then they, you know, compile it and put it into it. But just to break it out, in Family House, 3 kids left, 3 young people left voluntarily without a plan, because most of the time they won't have a plan when they're leaving. Mm-hmm. Gerald went independently. 9 went to the transitional program in 2014. And 3 went to some other shelter. And 126 went back home with their parents or guardian.
Is there any data what happens to them after that?
In the transitional living program, they try to follow up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're always successful. But the program here in Kingston and Ellenville is run by Jen Panetta. And she does try to keep up with the kids. Mm-hmm. Kids off, they come back to the house because they have little family nights where they encourage the kids to come.
Oh, okay.
So they come, they have dinner, and, you know,
keep that relationship. Yeah.
Keep it going. They've been very fortunate. A lot of their kids have gone on to college. And when they graduate from high school, they, you know, have big celebrations of big events in their lives because they don't have family. In the transitional program, most of those kids went to live with relatives or friends.
When a child presents at the emergency shelter, there's a full evaluation of the situation. There's someone inside the caseworker, and they identify, you know, what's the underlying cause, and then showing up to the A lot of times, if it's a family dispute, they'll mediate that and work to, identify the child with the family. But a lot of times, there are other situations. You know, a child that may not stay there may not be willing to address some of their underlying issues, like addiction. One of the reasons why they show up at that shelter. But again, it's really a phased approach where they present at the emergency shelter. They then they're kind of unified. They're there for about 30 days. Sometimes they swim in a little bit, especially if they have an infant. Then they transition them into their midway or midway to international cancers. And then, again, it's all about identifying the longer-term solution for those, you know, causing the potential homelessness.
So I have a question about, because we have this hearing tomorrow on the transgender law, I just have a question about the, you know, about how to gather the information about from the page. It says 3% of New York City, you know, identifying, I guess it means self-identifying, probably, as transgender, and then 1% in the rest of the state, so a total of 2% in the state overall. And from what I know, approximately 0.3% of the population identifies as transgender. So I'm just wondering if, I mean, clearly that's a whole issue in itself, the greater difficulty of that population in adjusting to life, let's say, in high school and so on. And I was just wondering if you could tell me more about how to gather that information, because I'm curious to understand better. Who actually compiled this report? Is it something?
That's a student report.
So they have. So when they gather the data, they have a same protocol for all the intake.
Yeah, I actually can I bring No, I do have one. It's called the Runaway Homeless Youth Residential Services Report, and every agency in the state does the report. They're all asked the same questions.
Thank you.
Okay.
So this is essentially a uniform intake. It's not easy to
okay. Now I'm just interested, you know, clearly that's a population that has more
certainly
difficulty with the
children. Issues with family accepting some of the support, and certainly is something that we deal with.
Well, I'm not speaking about accommodation issues right now. I'm just speaking about, you know, presenting that kind of information, for example, at the public hearing tomorrow, because 15 people are probably coming over from LGBTQ to testify about the need for understanding, at the very least, in our community. And I just think it's very interesting to see that the numbers are, you know, 10 times higher in your city, or whatever, 7 times higher in the state than the actual population.
These are only kids who showed up at the shelter.
That's right.
At the shelter.
And you don't even know how many don't. Exactly, but just in terms
so
of...
On this one that you just gave me is one.
Yes.
On this one.
That's great.
2014.
Maybe one of the blessings in that example is that, you know, that speaking of all the county health training is an accepting place. It's a place where people, you know, it's more common, you know, to talk about and be accepted.
Sure.
As identity,
oh,
right?
So
it'd be almost a less of a reason here than in like New York City. Why some child that lives from their house and run away?
No, there's no judgment in place. It's just more of a question of just trying to understand the difficulty of transgender people and how much harder it is for them to adjust to life as early as high school. And it's just yet another set of facts that I think, at least, you know, I know that Jeff Rundler's very interested in this sort of thing. I'd love to share that with him.
I know that at Midway, in Kingston, there was a young person who was transgender, and each of the youth had their own room. But there wasn't any, at the time that I've been here at the house, there was no hiding of who this person was, and you know, they made sure that he had a job in the community. I would see this person in the community working at ShopRite, and I see no longer at Midway, but still seen in the community and they are very supportive.
I'm sure that the center is. I'm just now thinking about society. Society is a tender whole. You know, so I mean, it's not a question about the, I'm sure being trained in working with runaways is a lot of understanding, so that's not.
Yeah, and also just to add to you, this is a very small supplement to the overall operation. For example, Family Out has a dozen full-time staff. I mean, it's a multi-million dollar operation. So this is probably about $70,000. And these are, you know, with everything you count, they're funding to make it work. Most of their funding flows through social services.
That was one for $70,000.
So, why don't we move Resolution 292, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 for the family of Woodstock Youth Bureau.
So moved.
Second. And so, that's what this, is that what this one is for?
For
any discussion? Okay. Okay, any other discussion? Oh, wait, the...
What
is the
Family House?
I'm sorry, 292 is for what? Midway. Okay. Is there any more discussion on this?
For the purposes of having a quorum, you need, you always need to be in the vote. And,
I'm not, I can vote in Family Woodstock now. I gave up my contract.
Okay, so I have a contract.
Oh, no.
But what I'm going to say is I disclose that I have a contract with them, but it's for them to act as a pass-through agent. I'll just say it in disclosure. As a pass-through agent for a contract that I have with the local economies project.
That was, I had the same thing with the food program and the ethics board rules that I can't vote.
I'm working on urban agriculture issues.
Yeah.
They're just processing the check.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I'm happy to disclose it and just say that for the purposes of this vote, I want to.
Fawn, what is, how did, do you know how that works? Now I'm now free to vote for Family Woodstock.
Well, we don't have a quorum.
Because I did the food program.
I
was part of the food program.
Well, that's because they thought it was because they
So how do you do that?
Not mine. Because I'm a food family. I was through Spring Valley. But that wasn't why it was because of the food program. Oh, no. It was a pass-through for the food program. So I'm thinking it's the same thing that probably, you know.
This year of your committee.
Yeah.
Another meeting.
So could it be like a five-minute meeting before caucus?
Yeah.
So that we can get the other members to vote?
Yeah. So that would be, so...
So that I can't move, can't move any family with that.
Okay, so, and that is the three.
At least I'm here.
But we can do the resolution approving the Children and Family Services Youth Bureau, 298.
But we
can play
also, so we just have to table all of those. What is the first one? Yes.
Sorry, I have to return my motion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's three, yes. Yeah. So we're going to... So what's the term for? We're going to postpone?
Yeah, postpone.
You don't have... No. You can't have this. That's why you need to be smart even to...
Table?
No action.
Okay, take no action. Okay, so do we have a motion to take no action on Resolution 292, 293, and 298? And Craig, second? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Motion carried. Okay, so those are tabled. And so now we have Resolution 289, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered to into by the county, Kingston Works Employer Health Services, a division of Health Alliance Hospital, Broadway Camp. Office for the Aging. So I'm moving. Second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Actually, I'd love to tell you about this one.
Sure.
This one just has to be something we've worked really hard on in the last 2 years. There's funds that flow, federal Medicaid dollars that flow from the state to the county from the balancing incentive program. The payments that we received to help divert people from nursing homes. And you know, we all know about New York Connects, right? So New York Connects changed. And when you go statewide, you can just devote debt money to expand not only to senior citizens, but people with disabilities as well. So you try to basically connect them to supports and keep people out of the nursing home. We had done a great job. Originally, the funding was about $500,000, and we, unlike most counties that took that money to supplant county dollars and save some money, we actually put all of it into programming. We have extensive contracts with Health Alliance, RIPCO, and RCAL, our entire living center, to implement these funds. This is a complete restructure. What the source solution does completely restructure the program. We took a 56% reduction in our state allocation. They basically said, you know what? It was nice that you come and did the last 2 years, but we're going to contract directly with the independent living centers in RFP. So instead of working through Ulster County and our local independent living center, they contracted with Westchester independent living center that's going to be staffing up and having supports for individuals here in the county. But essentially, we had to terminate our contract with our panel and RUPCO and instead consolidate the remaining funding through the help of our partners in the compliance. It's basically a very large effort that I thought we implemented very well. Unlike most counties, you know, put all into new services versus paying $15.
Today was good. Any questions? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn. Okay. Do we have any old business? New business? We're good? Motion to
second.
Okay.
Your reports.
So thank you.